Shocker, how are you?
I'm good today, buddy. How are you?
Oh, I'm all right. We were into the debate on women's sports and
Oh boy.
you know how because I think there are a lot of people where when half your society's girls, you know, we have people saying, women's sports are worthless. I'm always kind of like, well, what if you have a daughter? Are you going to tell your daughter, well, you shouldn't play sports because it's worthless? Like I'm kind of surprised by that mindset.
Well, yeah, and I'm sort of entering in here off the cuff, so I don't know who said what. All I know is that I watch my son play hockey, and quite often he plays against teams that have girls on them or against all girls teams, and they're some fantastic players. I've covered Olympics, multiple Olympics, and have had an absolute blast covering some of the world's greatest female athletes, and it's a spectacle. It's spectacular. It's fantastic. So the argument doesn't really go far with me and anybody who sort of says, "Oh, who gives a crap or who cares?" I just that's an opinion I just kind of disregard because I've seen it at the amateur level. I've seen it at the high-end amateur level. And is it the same? No. Is there beauty and value in it? Absolutely.
Yeah, there's definitely differences. There's no doubt about it.
Of
And
course there
you know,
is. Of course there is.
tennis is a unique one because at their majors, they coexist together, right? And it's
Yes.
really the only sport that does that. Golf, they don't play the majors at the same course, intermining them. NHL obviously doesn't play in the same rinks as the NWHL, NBA and WNBA, and then the NFL and Major League Baseball don't have it. Soccer, of course, doesn't do it. They're, you know, curling, even the Brier and the Scotties are in different places, right? So
Yeah, for sure. And but I mean, if the standard is that, well, they need to be treated absolutely equally, it's not realistic. I mean, business is business. Entertainment dollars are entertainment dollars. People are going to spend them where they choose to spend them. And I don't think the expectation should be, well, they have to be viewed exactly the same. They are what they are, right? The National Hockey League is what it is. The Brier is what it is. It doesn't make anything else meaningless. It doesn't make anything else worthless. It's just different. But I've been there. I've covered it. I've seen it. We know people that compete in high-level female sports, and you see the commitment level and the athleticism, and it's absolutely to be respected and appreciated. And anybody who wants to talk trash about it is just, I don't know, just kind of just being a chump to be a chump. There's no point to it. We all know it's not the exact same. It doesn't have to be to still have lots of meaning and importance.
The Oilers, I know you were joking last night about, good thing we took Letestu off the power play. The Oilers power play, we jokingly said, they'll score twice as Cassian, I think, who said it, and they would still lose. And lo and behold, that was the case last night for the Oilers. So their power play wakes up. But, like, in the third period, I'm not sure I've seen the Oilers play that well in the final 50 minutes of a third period in a one nothing in a one goal game and not score and then ultimately lose the game with an empty net.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll skip back to my amazing opinion yesterday and my bold proclamation that Letestu needed to come off the power play. As soon as I saw him win the draw, I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Now they've got complete possession and they're whipping it around in their zone, and then he finishes the play off, and I was like, oh, I'm going to eat this tomorrow. So I jumped ahead of you by kind of ripping myself. Hey, he won the draw clean. He gives them possession, and he showed that he's got a little bit of finish. So I will 100% admit that I was a little off base yesterday based on his performance last night. But to your point, yeah, I mean, I don't know that Todd McClellan had a lot to head into the dressing room upset about after that game last night. Of course, the streak against Arizona is awful. Awful, ugly, 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 especially against a Western Conference opponent, no good. But with that said, you take that game just on for face value, what it was last night. I mean, Talbot let in a bit of a soft goal, their goaltender didn't, and the Oilers played really, really hard to try and win that game and came up a little bit short. There were some mistakes, for sure, but I don't think there's a ton of room for criticism in that game. Outside of a few individual mistakes. Overall, I agree with you. They played their guts out trying to get back into that game, which says something for a team that's as far out of the playoffs as they are.
How many? Like Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, look, you know, we saw him take the hit last night, so it's going to be maybe they announced it as a concussion or upper body injury, whatever it is, but it seemed pretty obvious what it was. And it doesn't matter, Ryan. It never ends. Like it never ends the cycle of injuries with this group. So how do you change it?
I don't know if there's like this mindset you can shift into to make it go away. I don't think that you can suddenly say we're not going to employ this type of player because we got to get away from all these injuries. I don't know that there's a way you can say, okay, here's how we want everybody to train that reduce. I'm not sure if that exists. I don't know if there's an answer to your question. Gravitate towards players who have a history of staying healthy. Gravitate towards players who you know, can handle a more robust game. But some of this stuff that has to do with luck, you just got to ride it out. I mean, a staph infection in an ankle, you know, a hand on a blocked shot. This is just stuff that you just kind of got to ride out. And maybe, I don't know, if you believe in the hockey gods, I don't know, start doing more charity stuff. Or I don't know, man.
No.
I just don't know there's an answer to what you're saying. You just kind of got to ride it out.
Yeah, well, you wonder if it'll ever end. And I don't, like, when you look at this team realistically, like, one major trade isn't going to solve the problems of this team. Like, Peter Shirelli's got, what, five changes that he's got to make, probably at the minimal?
Five. I mean, impact changes, though? I don't know that I'd say he's got five impact changes to make.
Well, I would argue that a backup goalie is an impact change because a backup goalie is going to play 20 games a night and 20 games a year, and you got to have a backup goalie that you trust and believe that when he goes in, you know, the drop-off isn't going to be significant enough that it costs your team's games, right? So that's
sure.
One. I think there's two right-shot defensemen they need. Like, I know everybody's in love with Jordan Oosterle for what he does, and that's great, but I'm really sorry. I'm not going to – Jordan Oosterle skates well. He makes good decisions with the puck. He's got a muffin of a shot. And I'm wondering, like, what does he do to really impact the game? Yes, he doesn't make mistakes, and that's viewed upon as a great thing, but Edmonton's for too long has just had too many what I would deem nondescript players. At the end of the night, I'm like, you can look at their – I'm like, but what do they ultimately do to impact the game? Right, and I just still think they have too many of those guys.
Yeah, well, anybody who thinks, oh, boy, you know, cross that off the to-do list, Jordan Oosterle's here, that's not the case. He, you know, maybe Brandon Davidson, because of how Davidson developed this year, maybe that strikes something off the list. But Oosterle has been good, and I would be relying on him to come in and be a good, you know, sixth, seventh, eighth defenseman next year. That's if I were the Oilers, that's the way I'd be viewing it. I wouldn't be saying we no longer need to go find this or that because we have Jordan Oosterle. I still think that at the high end of the D-core, there needs to be two changes, significant ones. You know, the backup goalie, yes, it's important. They've found their starter, way bigger job, way more important job. It's taken them a long time. They can strike that off their to-do list. They're hoping, moving forward, that he can maintain that level. So the backup is important, but they think they have it in Brossoit. They're going to, my guess is they go out and get a veteran guy on a one-way deal that can push him a little bit. And if Brossoit earns it, then he gets to be in the NHL. If he doesn't, then he's starting in the minors. But Talbot's going to get the bulk of the starts next year. I think they're going to want to play him a lot. So really, we're talking about two significant changes. They're going to have a high draft pick. We're talking about two significant changes on the back end and some shuffling of the deck with some support players. I don't know that it's five significant changes away from being able to have an impact. I mean, I was talking to an executive from another team recently, and we were basically off the record, so I won't say who, but the sense his organization got was when it turns, it will turn fast, because if they find the pieces they need, the rest of it will fall into place. They've got enough at the high end that if they find the pieces they need on the back end, it'll turn fast. And I would tend to agree more with that there are a couple pieces on the back end away from it looking a lot different.
Well, Oilers fans hope you're right, Shogger, because it's
Those are tough changes to make, though. I mean,
yeah,
they've been trying to make those changes for 4 years now.
Yeah,
right?
That's the other thing. So there, that kind of leads to my question. You know, Peter Shirelli might know what he wants to do. How realistic do you think it is that he will find the trade partners to get him what he wants?
Well, listen, let's go back to what he talked about at the trade deadline when we asked him that very question about, and when I asked him the question, did you do any big picture stuff here? Were there any potential big deals, defensemen in play? And he said, not really, but he laid a ton of groundwork. He had a lot of conversations that he feels lead to further conversations down the road and in the off season. Put a lot of scenarios in place. My guess is he's got a trade or two in his pocket that he knows he could probably pull off in the off season, assuming the scenario doesn't change for his trade partner. My guess is he's got a couple of deals in his pocket already that he thinks he probably would be able to swing. And it's a matter of figuring out which ones are the right ones to do and what's worth it and what's not. It sounds like he's done a lot of groundwork and a lot of preparation to try and execute these deals in the offseason. And the one thing that I'd say he enters the offseason with that, you know, Craig McTavish did not enter the offseason with 2 years ago, nor the season before, nor, you know, Tambellini before him. And that is an absolute willingness to trade just about anybody on his roster. And I don't think that's been the case here yet. And I think that changes things. So outside of Connor McDavid, maybe Taylor Hall, Leon Draisaitl, maybe Darnell Nurse, that leaves you with a tremendous number of very valuable assets that he's willing to move. And that's what's different this time around and maybe why he can get it done.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Elliot Friedman had just a very short sentence saying that everybody but Draisaitl and McDavid is amongst his forwards group is up for grabs. I'm not sure that's earth-shattering news. As you know, most people have talked about that. You know, outside those two centers, they'd be willing to move anyone.
I would have had Hall on that list earlier this year. I don't know that Peter Chiarelli's analysis has changed or not. But yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, put Hall in play potentially.
Yeah, I get. The thing is, when you start to look at all the numbers of Taylor Hall does, like he just produces way more chances, points, and everything than Nugent Hopkins and Eberle, right? Like it's amazing.
Yeah.
There's a bigger gap than people think between him and those two.
Oh, I agree. But I guess, listen, could Taylor Hall be in play? Yeah. How many defensemen are out there and potentially available that you'd be willing to give Taylor up for in a trade? Probably not very many. Like, the list is probably fairly short of defensemen that you could conceivably trade for, where Taylor Hall, you know, where you'd be willing to move Taylor Hall for them. So, I mean, if you start looking, I mean, if putting Taylor Hall on the market all of a sudden wedges loose a bunch of guys we don't know are available, then okay. You know, if Tampa Bay comes and says, hey, you know, we're willing to move Victor Hedman, well, of course you're going to listen. Of course you're going to think about those things, right? So untradeable suggests, like, Connor McDavid is untradeable. There's no player in the league that I would even consider trading him for. None. Zero. Not a single player anywhere playing in the NHL that I would consider making that trade for. That's the only untouchable player on the team. Even Leon Draisaitl. I mean, for goodness sakes, if they start saying the right names, of course you're going to consider it. But it's very unlikely. And I would put Taylor Hall more in that category. It would take a very high-end player, I think, for them to be willing to move Taylor. Whereas the other, I think there's a drop-off there. You know, Nuge, Jordan Eberle, you know, those types of guys, I think it's more likely and a different type of player you're talking about in return.
What did you think of the hit on Nugent Hopkins?
Wish we had another angle. Really wish we had another angle. Like, it looked like, I understand what Louis was saying, it looked like he might have caught the head first with the shoulder, and if he did catch Ryan's shoulder, it was just kind of grazing it. And so when the head is the principal point of contact, even if it's not an elbow, even if it's a shoulder, that's a little bit sketchy. And we needed a few more looks at that. But because of where it was, they only have so many camera angles that can get a look at that. The camera angle that I saw, it was kind of inconclusive. It looked like it could have been dirty, but you couldn't really tell how much of the shoulder he got. So I would say inconclusive, and I don't think they'd be willing to suspend a guy on inconclusive evidence. You?
Well, they would need a different angle, I would agree, for sure.
Yeah.
Right.
But like, it looks like he caught him in the head, for sure, but how much shoulder did he catch, and how much was the head the principal point of contact there?
Hard to tell, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why we're not hearing about much today.
One last one for you. Will Darnell Nurse be Matt Hendricks tomorrow night? Will he have to get a tilt out of the way early in that game?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Now, I mean, they've still got Mike Brown, right?
No, Mike Brown's in Montreal.
Oh, is he gone now? Oh, yeah, that's right. They dealt him. I saw he got into a scrap the other day. I don't know.
Brandon Dillon, right? I guess if
Brandon Dillon's not going to want to fight Darnell Nurse. He's going to have no interest in that. So, I mean, maybe he would step up and do it. I mean, what's Polak's situation? Does he want to settle that score? I don't know.
He might, right? I'm sure.
Who knows? Maybe it's Thornton. You know, maybe it's Brent Burns. Like, who knows? It wouldn't surprise me if one of the Sharks wanted to get at Darnell, for sure. It wouldn't surprise me at all. And I don't think Darnell's going to run from anybody on that team. I think he'll willingly fight anybody. So if somebody comes to him and wants to go, I think he'll settle the score. I'm not sure which Shark would be the one to do it. If it would be Polak himself, or if maybe the nose is still a little tender.
Yeah, I'm trying to look down the rest of their lineup. I don't see a lot. I guess Michael Halley might be the guy. I'm not even sure if they call him up or not. But other than that, no, they don't have a whole bunch of guys that are that way. And that's why I asked the question. Like, Gabranson basically had called out Hendricks right in that game, right?
Yeah.
And so you knew that was coming. I'm just I'm curious if they have somebody that they'll do it in San Jose.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, Gabranson is – I mean, there are a few guys around the league that Gabranson can't handle himself against, right? So that's a little bit – that's a bit of a different scenario. But yeah, I mean, I don't think Darnell will have any issue settling that score if they want to. I think he probably understands. If he chooses not to and turns guys down, well, I guess that's kind of his prerogative. But my sense is he's a little more old school that way.
Yeah, I don't think Nurse turns it down. I'm just curious if San Jose would have somebody who wanted to do it. It'll be interesting. Because if they all talk a big game like they did after the game and then they don't do anything, I kind of have less respect for them. If you want to say, hey, we really had an issue with it, then show you have an issue with it.
Yeah. No. Yeah, well, who knows? Maybe that's Joe. You know, maybe, I mean, Joe's fought a fair amount over his time. He's not afraid to do it. He's fought some big guys too. So maybe that's a guy like Joe Thornton taking that upon himself to take care of. But, or you know what, maybe Polak wants a fair fight, wants to go and take care of it himself. Maybe he doesn't want to put that on anybody else. He's a pretty hard-nosed guy.
Shogger, have yourself a good one. We will chat with you tomorrow.
Okay, buddy. Take care.
Ryan Oshog from TSN.